This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
KPFT Houston. At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Belinsky.
And J.D. Doyle.
And Glenn Holt. And we're sort of it this evening, as it were.
Except for that big crew in the lobby who is helping us raise money.
That's right. We have telephones in the green room, and we hope to be hearing them go ringy-dingy with all those enthusiastic supporters calling in and pledging support and money and time and volunteerism and all that good kind of stuff.
You're right. Just in case this is the first time you've ever tuned into KPFT, we are a community-based radio station, which means that we rely on the community to help support us. We do not have commercials. We basically, this show is a public affairs show, which is for and about the GLBT community, and we talk about different events that go on, but we hope that the community that we come to a couple times a year helps support us. And it's really easy to do that. You can do it online at kpft.com. Or you can simply call up at 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT.
And even if you bees listening on the internet, that's worthy of support too. If you're out there in South Africa, we still need your support because we're still doing this here for you, so please.
And if you're listening to iTunes later on, you can still call us up.
Oh, that's
and just
too,
say
yeah.
You're listening to Queer Voices. And not that it's important that we get credited for that, but it would be nice.
It would be very nice.
So we have a show this evening. We have Halloween Magic, actually their 20th year reunion celebration. That's going to be coming up Saturday, November 1st, and we're going to have those folks on to talk about that and to talk about the services and community organizations that will benefit. Also, we're going to have somebody on, Megan Stabler, a member of the Houston Rights, the Human Rights Campaign, and Senator Obama's National LGBT Policy and Steering Committee member. And she's going to talk about a Get Informed event that's going to be happening Saturday the 25th. We have a segment in the second hour with gay humorist David Sedaris. And if you've never heard of his name, his gift isn't something that, he takes something small, like a boil or a lozenge, and makes it big. And instead, the writer is really skilled at turning actions involving small things like that and making them into something contemplative and quick toxic. So it will be interesting to hear a couple of outtakes from David Sedaris. And then later on in the program, we have the rest from This Way Out, and earlier on in the program, we have News Wrap, but very first, leading off the top of the show, we have J.D. Doyle actually live and in the studio, because most of the time he's dead, but today he's live in the studio to talk about the Houston Women's Festival with guest.
Right, thank you. Yes, usually I am not in person live in the studio. Usually I'm only heard the fourth Monday of the month, plug, on my Queer Music Heritage show. Next week, by the way, features Gay Doug Balola and Scott Free. That's in the second hour next week. But this is one of my favorite interviews of the year. This is about the Houston Women's Festival, the 14th annual. And I'm excited about this. It's Saturday, October 25th. Before we get into the nitty-gritty with the director, Sharman Petri, I'm going to treat you to a quick medley of, I forgot to count how many artists there were, but all of the artists who are going to be there are in this medley. So just listen to the variety and the talent you'll get a chance to hear.
You can do all that and fall.
Thank you. this? What kind of love is this? What kind of love is this? No mention of direction, no mention of obsession, no mention of dimension. What kind of love is this? Do 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 do.
Again, this is J.D. Doyer. You're listening to Queer Voices, and I had fun putting that medley together. Let's find out who we heard. We started off at the top with Sarah Bettens, then Blame Sally, Carrie Rodriguez, Sister Funk, Ginger Lay, Wendy Colonna, Robin Smith, and Carrie Kay. And in the studio, we have not a singer. We have Sharman Petrie, director of the festival. Welcome, Sharman.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Okay. What is the Houston Women's Festival?
Well, it is a festival that features leading women artists, and we are in our 14th year and going strong. We've had probably the best ticket sales, pre-sales that we've had in quite a while, but there's still room for some more people. So tickets are on sale right now.
And where's it being held?
It's being held at Jones Plaza, which is in the downtown theatrical district. It's at 600 Louisiana at Texas Avenue. It's sandwiched between the Verizon Wireless and Jones Hall.
Okay, and this is Saturday, noon until 10. This is an all-day deal. You will have lots to listen to, but what else is going on at the festival to accompany the music?
Well, we have a lot of vendors. We have people that are have arts and crafts, clothing lines. We also have a lot of people from the community that are going to be giving people information on community services, just a variety of different things. Pride Houston will be there.
KPFT usually is there.
KPFT is usually there. You know, just a lot of different community people are out there and supporting us as we support them as well.
And this is a 501c3?
That is correct. We are a nonprofit.
And where do any profits go?
Well, normally usually we just barely break even. It takes a lot of funds to put this festival on.
But especially if it rains one year.
Especially if it rains one year. But what we do is everything that we bring in, we put into the following year's festival. And I'm actually looking at trying to build our nonprofit base so that we can give out some scholarships or something of that nature. And I've got a board that I work with, and we're trying to work on what the best thing to do for, you know, to give back to the community as well.
A general question first. What do you look for when you're picking these artists?
Well, I look for touring bands, professional touring bands, and people that, of course, some of them, of course, need to have a good draw in the Houston area, or we wouldn't attract as many people. But I look for professional, hardworking, independent touring artists. I don't look for people. For artists that just play on the weekends, they have to be hardworking touring artists. They have to have a certain quality to their music. I mean, it has to be top notch bands. We're not gonna bring in just some little garage band in here. So that's what I look for. I also look for people that have. I get requests that why don't you bring so and so.
I've done that.
You have done that, and we've had several of your suggestions, and glad that you did suggest some of the folks that we've had.
Let's go over just there are 9 different artists. We counted them during the medley, and I want to mention just several of them. The lead act, who's on last, is Sarah Bettens, and she was lead singer for a number of years on a band called K's Choice, which had a lot of success in the U.S. and also Europe, and she's getting ready for another European tour. She has an amazing tour schedule. Her latest video, Shine, is on Logo's New Now Next, and here's something I gleaned from her site that's pretty cool. A Belgian newspaper purchased 180,000 copies of her CD to be distributed in the paper, and it sold out immediately. 180,000?
That's a lot, isn't it?
She is big time.
Yeah.
And another act, this caught my eye. I'm a sucker for harmony. There's a group called Blame Sally. They're from West Coast, right?
They're from San Francisco.
And I'm very much looking forward to them. They have several albums under their belt. Kind of, just a nutshell, what about that group?
Well, as you said, harmonies. Their harmonies are impeccable. They are one of the tightest bands I've ever seen. And I saw them 2 years ago at the Folk Alliance, and they just blew me away. I mean, I was walking down a hall, and I heard their harmonies, and it drew me. It was such a strong sound. It drew me to them. And they're exquisite musicians. They're multi-instrumentalists. They're all fabulous songwriters. and there's no egos among them. They just all work together, and you can tell that they're having fun at what they're doing.
I know you wanted to talk for a moment about Carrie Rodriguez.
Yeah, Carrie is, she's going to bring a lot of additional visibility as well as credibility to this festival, because she's actually, her current CD that just dropped in August is number two on the Americana charts right now, and that's pretty good stuff.
Yeah.
She also recently taped a segment for a television series, and so I think, you know, she's an incredible musician. She's a San Antonio, Austin girl, so she's kind of coming home, and we're just really grateful to have her. I mean, I think people are going to really be drawn to her. She plays fiddle, she plays electric mandolin, so she's a great performer.
Another act, I've seen this act. They're called Sister Funk. They're out of Connecticut. Very high energy. They will get the crowd moving.
Yes, they will.
Charmin hasn't had the opportunity to see them, but they are good. And we have a special host for the event.
Ginger Lee.
And she's played a number of times in this area. She's out of Austin, I believe.
She's out of Austin. Yes, she does play regular shows here in Houston. And I've known Ginger for quite a while, but she's a great in front of the mic. I mean, she's just a natural. She gets people pumped up. She knows most of the artists that are playing, so she can, you know, she doesn't even have to look at a bio sheet. She knows them. So she's just a great asset for the festival and just really gets it moving.
And the artist who was not in the medley that we're going to hear at the end of the segment is Miss Money. She's our local R&B rapper, producer, radio host, and DJ. And she is so sweet. I love her. By the way, she was one of the main artists featured in the movie Pick Up the Mic, which was about gay hip-hop, an excellent documentary. She was one of the stars of that. By the way, I was in that movie for like 8 seconds.
I did not know that.
You'll hear her at the end, but you asked if I had a trick question for you. What artist are you personally looking forward to seeing the most?
I'd have to say Blame Sally and Carrie Rodriguez. But I'm also looking forward to seeing Blame Sally. I mean, Sarah Bettens.
Of course.
But
yeah.
All of them. I mean, we have such a good lineup.
They're so varied, and obviously from the medley, very talented. We're not allowed to give ticket prices, but this is a real bargain. But please tell us where to get the tickets.
Well, tickets are available online, and we have a buy now button, so you can't miss it. They're also available at area outlets. We've got them at the Shop Hair Salon. I'm not going to give out addresses.
You can find it on the website.
It's on the website. They're also at Lucia's Garden and DeCapo's Bakery in the Heights. But they are very low, and we keep them low because we want to give something to the community.
And what about people coming from out of town?
People that come from out of town, we've got a very low hotel rate. You can find that on our website. I'll just say this. You can get a suite and breakfast for one low price. So if you are in need of a place to stay, just go to our website and you'll find our hotel partner there.
And do y'all need volunteers?
We have our volunteers in place, but I would like people that go to the festival to sign up on our email list that we'll have, because we're always needing volunteers throughout the year.
And it's a great group to get involved with, because they do, as she said, other events during the year, and the networking is fabulous. And is there a website?
There is a website, www.hwfestival.org.
HW Houston Women's Festival.org. And the event again, the 14th Annual Houston Women's Festival, Saturday, this next Saturday, October 25th, noon until 10 p.m. at Jones Plaza downtown. Thank you, Charmin, for guesting with
you.
Us. And we're going to close with our own Miss Money.
always done things right.
Manita told on her own soul.
Sometimes I find it hard to breathe, but don't exhale, I miss money. But see, it doesn't mean a thing to me. I ain't celebrity, be down here on my knees.
Spend a long time, I don't go to church.
I GJ the G-spot, party after work. I ain't gonna lie, this and God show hurts.
I need to wear more like my polo shirts. Papa talks sometimes, don't stop.
I love me some Heineken.
Used to drink them there,
baby, I done brought it down a bit.
Birthing verses when I know for certain I ain't have to be here. Abandoned at birth, what am I worth? Going to church, looking for God, but hurts wouldn't let me search. Father, forgive me for turning my back, turning the crack, turning my stacks. Like I guess I didn't need you for that. Spiritual warfare, yes, I believe in holy war. Cause half the time I'm fighting, I don't know who I'm fighting for. I know your name, Jesus, Elohim, El Shaddai. Spoke your name in the fetus. Even in the fetus, demons was trying to give reason for daddy to leave us in. Mama to abort the child for the struggle ain't ever alive. I can't say life is easy, but believe me, knowing I got a friend that'll never forsake me, make it worth breathing. Suicide made it tempting for leaving, but choose your purpose, reverse the cursing, and be considered is a good enough reason.
I'll ask you again.
This is Queer Voices, and J.D., who was that?
Our own Miss Money.
And who's Miss Money?
Miss Money's a local rapper, DJ, producer, obviously a great R&B singer.
Uh-huh.
She'll be starting the lineup at the Houston Women's Festival this Saturday.
She's got a really beautiful, mellow voice.
Oh, yes, and she raps great, too.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And, Jack.
Yes, well, you're all looking at me. It's
mm-hmm.
time of the year again to ask for you all to help support KPFT. As you know, of course, the whole economy is down the drain. The Republicans basically took all the money out of the cash box for the country, and I know we're all sort of suffering, but... you know, this station is a voice to be able to talk about those issues that aren't usually talked about. In fact, one of the programs that I don't always get to listen to is Leo Gold's New Capital, which is a very interesting program. It's on it Thursday, I think, at 10 a.m. right after Democracy Now, and talks about how, you know, how all these corporations get big tax breaks. And, you know, this is the type of stuff that KPFT covers that it's not even covered anywhere else. And I do like NPR a lot, and I listen to it a lot, but it doesn't go beyond some of the stuff that needs to be talked about in this country. You know, the country's more than two political parties. There's a lot of different things going on that isn't really being talked about that we do here, at least to the best of our ability. And between the Democracy Now! And a lot of the programs that are produced locally, and that's the other interesting thing, is that KPFT, there is so much localism on KPFT. You listen to some of the other stations, you don't hear that. They're playing all music and not really local music, which is played here. We talk talk about the events that go on here. So we're asking for you for the support, not only for this program, but for all the other programs that come here on KPFT.
KPFT is diversity.
You better believe it. Sometimes it even scares us all how diverse it is. Definitely, all the different programs that's on, and you go from hour to hour, and it's like, you know, it's what this country's supposed to be about, diversity.
We're one of the few cities in the country with two gay and lesbian programs.
Absolutely. In fact, even in San Francisco, there is no GLBT program.
I don't believe there is a regular show, no.
There is not. Issues are covered, but there isn't a regular show.
In L.A., if there's a show, it's an hour.
And we have 2 hours, and after hours is three or four.
I can't remember now.
We can't stay up that late. Yeah, but they do a different show than us, and we try to do a lot of the issues, and they sort of get around a little bit more folksy, I guess is probably the way to say it. But they do some good stuff, and we try to do some good stuff. So we're asking you to support us. We come to you just a couple times a year, so call us at 713-526. KPFT 713-526-5738.
And one of the things that we do for the gay and lesbian community is we carry This Way Out, which is produced out in Los Angeles.
Right.
And JD actually participates in that.
I'm one of the producers of their monthly music segment.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that they do for us each week is called This Way Out News Wrap.
I'm Pam Marshall.
And I'm Chris Wilson.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending October 18th, 2008. The long-running challenge to India's anti-lesbi-gay sex law continued this week in the Delhi High Court as the Prime Minister unexpectedly got involved. The country's Home Ministry, calling gay sex the product of a perverse mind, wants to keep Penal Code Section 377, a remnant of British colonial rule banning unnatural sex. Supported by the Law Ministry, they've cited prevailing social mores and argued that repeal would create law and order problems. The Health Ministry, especially through its leader, Anbumani Ramadas, strongly advocates repeal, saying that the law drives gay people underground and hampers HIV/AIDS prevention efforts. Home Minister Shivraj Patil wanted the cabinet to issue a recommendation on the case during its meeting this week, but Ramadas was not there, so the cabinet issued a statement only saying that they'd agree with whatever the court decides. That prompted Prime Minister Manmohan Singh, who hasn't expressed an opinion on the case, to publicly order the two ministers to resolve their differences on the issue. The Delhi High Court itself has criticized the Indian government for allowing its ministries to submit conflicting affidavits in the case.
Judges also took exception this week when the Solicitor General, who's arguing for the government against repeal, cited biblical texts to support that position. Chief Justice A.P. Shah charged that this is just a one-sided version of religious doctrine which cannot be relied upon. Show us some scientific report which says that gay sex should be criminalized. The court asked for any World Health Organization reports on the subject and expressed support for the National AIDS Control Organization's affidavit arguing for decriminalization to fight the disease. The judges also rebuked the Solicitor General for suggesting that gay people are not a legitimate minority group and implying that court-ordered repeal would divide the country. The non-governmental organization NAS Foundation filed the challenge to the antiquated Indian law, charging that Section 377 unconstitutionally infringes on fundamental rights to life, liberty, and freedom of expression.
The Australian Senate this week passed legislation that would allow unmarried heterosexual and same-gender couples to use federal family law courts to resolve differences when their relationships fall apart. Current laws governing so-called de facto heterosexual couples vary in each Australian state or territory. The new legislation will establish a uniform nationwide system and does not differentiate between de facto heterosexual and same-gender couples. The government says the reforms will simplify the laws governing separating unmarried couples in areas including property ownership and other financial agreements, and will also make an often painful process less expensive. A series of technical amendments were added to the bill, so it now returns to the lower house for approval before being sent to Governor General Quentin Bryce, who is expected to sign the bill into law. The government is trying to make good on its election promises to reform dozens of federal laws that discriminate against gay and lesbian couples. Some members of the opposition have charged that such reforms threaten the traditional definition of marriage, even though Australian law specifically defines that institution as exclusively heterosexual.
In other news, comments about LGBT people seeking asylum in the UK by Lynn Homer, chief executive of the British Borders and Immigration Agency, have infuriated human rights activists. She told the Scotsman newspaper this week that immigration courts consider the practical consequences of possible deportation for each individual, and that the simple presence of either a law or a culture that frowns upon homosexuality is not of itself a reason to grant asylum. Nico Jutton, policy manager of LGBT Youth Scotland, called Homer's comments astonishing and told the newspaper that judges often say something along the lines of, "You'll probably be fine as long as you keep a low profile. But if someone has fled the country because of their homosexuality, they are going to be closely monitored when they are returned." The UK has notoriously denied asylum in recent months to lesbi-gay refugees from homo-oppressive Middle Eastern and African countries. Just last week, Jojo Yakov, a young gay Syrian man, expressed fears for his life after a Scottish judge rejected his appeal of a deportation order.
The incoming editor of a provincial newspaper in Finland says she was fired before starting work because management found out that she's in a registered same-gender partnership. Johanna Korhonen also says she was offered 100,000 euros to keep quiet about the situation. However, CEO Kai Talan of Alma Media, which owns the local newspaper, said the company terminated Korhonen because she failed to reveal that her partner was involved in politics. Reports said Korhonen's spouse was running for a seat on the city council in Vantaa, a city of about 190,000 people near Helsinki. But Korhonen said that the couple had planned to move hundreds of miles away to the Lapland capital of Rovaniemi for her new job, making the political argument irrelevant. Even Finnish President Tarja Halonen has commented on the matter, telling reporters that she was shocked by Korhonen's firing.
9 in 10 U.S. LGBT teens have been verbally abused in the past school year, and almost half have been physically harassed because of their sexual orientation. That's the disturbing assessment in an annual National School Climate Survey released late last week by the Gay, Lesbian, and Straight Education Network, or GLSEN. The survey involved more than 6,200 self-identified LGBT students from all 50 states and the District of Columbia. It found that three-quarters of them hear slurs such as faggot or dyke frequently or often at school, and 9 in 10 hear anti-LGBT language frequently or often. That type of environment obviously makes learning more difficult. About a third of the teens said they'd skipped at least a day of school in the previous month because they felt unsafe. The study did find that students in schools with an LGBT-supportive gay-straight alliance experienced less harassment because of their sexual orientation and gender expression, but only about a third said there was a gay-straight alliance at their school. GLSEN Executive Director Kevin Jennings said that, "It's hard to believe that anyone who reads this report could continue to turn the other way as our nation's LGBT students are bullied and harassed at alarming rates. Every student," he said, "has a right to feel safe in school, free from bullying and harassment."
Meanwhile, a California appeals court this week upheld a judgment against a San Diego area school district for not protecting its LGBT students. Joey Ramelli and Megan Donovan were each victimized by relentless taunting and anti-gay slurs at Poway High School. Ramelli was physically assaulted and his car was vandalized. The two found the harassment so brutal that they each had to drop out and complete studies toward their high school diplomas at home. They sued the district in 2005 and were represented by the LGBT advocacy group Lambda Legal. During the original trial, the court was told that both Donovan and Ramelli reported the harassment to school officials to no avail. The jury found that the officials took minimal or no action at all and decided that the harassment was so severe and pervasive that they awarded $175,000 in damages to Ramelli and $125,000 to Donovan. Lambda Legal attorney Brian Chase said he hopes that by upholding the jury verdict, the California Court of Appeal for the 4th District is sending a message to other school districts. We hope this lawsuit and the attention it has generated, he said, will remind school officials everywhere that parents expect their kids to be safe from bullying and violence during school hours. The school district hasn't yet announced if it will appeal to the California Supreme Court.
And finally, homophobia can permeate college campuses, too. For a third consecutive year, the Equality Ride is trying to improve that situation. It's sponsored by Soul Force Q, the youth division of the non-denominational group whose goal it is to eradicate what it calls spiritual violence against LGBT people. Equality Riders travel by buses to various colleges and universities, many operated as Christian institutions, hoping to engage in constructive dialogue with students and school officials to make their campuses more LGBT-friendly. But Equality Riders ran into trouble twice this week, first at Palm Beach Atlantic University in West Palm Beach, Florida. The school's student handbook forbids sexual activity that is inconsistent with biblical teaching, such as homosexual behavior. College administrators had restricted the riders to a sidewalk near a campus chapel, but when six of them attempted to enter the chapel for a morning service, campus security director Terry Wheeler called police to make trespassing arrests, telling the young people that, "You are an unwanted guest." The remaining Equality Riders held a vigil near the college throughout the afternoon. Their bus had also been vandalized the night before.
Three Equality Riders were arrested later in the week at Heritage Christian University in Florence, Alabama. The group always advises school administrators in advance of their plans to visit each campus. But after a university official read a letter stating that they were declining the request for dialogue, three riders were arrested for trespassing when they stepped onto the campus to deliver letters advocating the safety and acceptance of LGBT students. Equality Ride co-director Jarrett Lucas said in a statement that HCU trains missionaries to go beyond the walls of their school to spread the inclusive gospel of Christ, but today they chose not to uphold the principles they preach. That was the sixth stop on this year's tour. Equality Riders have visited more than 50 colleges and universities during the past 3 years, most of which, to varying degrees, have been welcoming.
That's News Wrap for the week ending October 18, 2008. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Pam Marshall.
And I'm Chris Wilson.
This is Queer Voices.
That's the closest I could come to a gay Halloween song, Jack. That was Klaus Nomi and Ding Dong the Witch is Dead.
Well, that's good. And we're hoping next week that Joan is going to sort of talk a little bit about Halloween, because it will be our Halloween show. And it's the show next to the show before the elections, although early voting is going on the next couple weeks.
Well, we needed a Halloween song for the next segment.
Yes, we do, because we're going to talk about Halloween magic. And Andrew Edmondson is here with us to talk about it. And Andrew, how are you involved in this event?
I'm on the board of directors, and I am in charge of helping with the PR and promotion for the event.
Oh, well, then that's just perfect. So tell us a little bit about Halloween Magic, a little bit about its history, and what's going to happen this year.
Sure. This year's Halloween Magic takes place Saturday, November 1st at the Edwin Hornberger Conference Center. It is a wonderful event that started in 1988 as a way to raise money for Houston HIV service organizations. And it began as a series of small dinner parties in private homes. And then in 1992, in the best gay spirit, someone had the bright idea of, let's put on a show in Granddad's barn, and after the dinner parties, we will have a big show. And so the first year's show was called the Roxy Horror Beauty Shop, and it was a cross of the Rocky Horror Picture Show and Steel Magnolias. And then they had a kind of series of wonderfully camp, over-the-top, completely inappropriate satires, The Sound of Montrose, Murder on the Montrose Express,
I remember
Titanic
these titles
Adventures.
Over the years, they were all wonderful, with like Betty Davis characters and Joan Crawford and Lucille Ball. And
totally.
Mix everything together.
You pull everything you can from pop culture. Our president, Gilbert Perez, says that we are equal opportunity offenders.
Uh-huh.
So if you're politically on the left, we go after Bill Clinton when he has an affair with Monica Lewinsky. If you're on the right, we go after Liddy Dole when she and Bob Dole are running for
president. Can you spell
president?
Camp?
C-A-M-P! But what's been wonderful about it is we've really developed a following. We have typically 800 to 900 people who
wow.
turn out for the event.
Wow.
And we've raised over $1 million in the 20 years that we have been putting the event together. We hit the $1 million mark in 2004. And I think it is one of the great Houston gay institutions where you have people who want to help and who have a lot of creativity and who are wonderfully irreverent and bring it all together to make a great
show. I've been to several of these. They're hilarious.
Well, you know, it's really interesting because we were just earlier talking about off the air, talking about a lot of the institutions in this community sort of going away. But yet we also have this history of things like Halloween Magic and the Bunnies event that happens every year. Formerly Miss Camp America Houston, which was very uniquely Houston.
Diana's?
As I guess...
Diana's?
Know, Diana's,
yep.
Right. That have come together that... And you were saying that how this started out as small events and then all of a sudden it sort of ballooned. And these other things did too. And these other things were just sort of parties and then... AIDS came along, and then...
They became fundraisers.
They became incredible fundraisers.
Like the bunny party.
Yes, absolutely. So what's going to happen this year?
This year we are going to satirize the musical South Pacific. The show is called South Pacific Street, The Last Enchanted Evening, because our space where we have been performing, the Edwin Hornberger Conference Center, which was formerly a part of the big Fable Shamrock Hotel, big glamorous hotel that opened in the early 50s here in Houston, it is going to be torn down in November. And so we're going to go out with a bang.
What a great space, too.
It's a wonderful space, great for kind of large-scale special event
super
where you
parking?
Need to serve food.
It's wonderful.
It's very accessible to Montrose.
And I guess we need another hospital.
I guess.
But we're really happy because we have Maria Todd, who used to be the DJ KRBE.
She's in San Francisco now.
But she's coming back.
Fabulous.
Especially for the show. And
wow.
She's going to be our MC. And our community loves Maria Todd.
Yes.
She has been so supportive of the gay and lesbian and bisexual transgender community here. We also have, each year Halloween Magic has three regular characters. There's Wanda Jean Smathers, who is the reigning debutante of Idaloo, Texas. There's Venezuela, the kind of Cuban spitfire, Latina over the top, looks like she stepped out of a telenovela. And then there's Pleasure Nouveau, possibly the world's dumbest blonde. And Pleasure, the guy who plays her, Brad Smith, moved to Los Angeles 4 years ago. But when he heard that this was going to be the last ever Halloween Magic, he's flying back in at his own expense to be able to take part in the show. So people get really loyal and attached to Halloween Magic. So I think it's going to be really funny, but also, in a way, really bittersweet.
Absolutely.
I've seen some very talented performances and parodies over the year. The person who used to do Lucille Ball was incredible.
We have a guy, Matthew West, who does the best Ernestine the Operator. He could go right up there with Lily Tomlin on that. We also had, I don't think he's in the show this year, a guy who's a very well-known actor in Houston, Jimmy Phillips, and he played Norma Desperate when we had our satire, Montrose Boulevard. It was a big send-up of Sunset Boulevard, and he was wonderful. So you really have some talented theater people coming in and making the show come alive.
Fabulous.
And it's for three great causes. This year it benefits Legacy Community Health Services, which provides low-cost or no-cost health care to anybody who comes through their doors. Also, it'll benefit Assisters, and they do great work putting together care teams to help care for women in the community who, it's not necessarily medical support, but kind of household support just to kind of make things happen. And we're also going to be benefiting Pet Patrol this year. So good community organizations. So you'll know your...
So is Halloween Magic its own nonprofit organization?
It is indeed.
Wow. What a shame. It's going to be the last year.
But it should go out with a bang.
Yes, absolutely. So how are ticket sales?
We are doing very, very well. We sold out the kind of best tables that we have. We have a few tables left and some single tickets. And if people are interested, they can go to our website, www.halloweenmagic.org, or they can call us. And we have our star of the show, Venezuela. She does a whole message in character. And if you just want to hear her message, it's kind of free and it's worth the price of the ticket. It's 713-226-2342.
And how did you get involved in this?
I was writing for the Houston Voice, and I interviewed Gilbert Perez, who is the chair of the board, and he also plays Venezuela, and he has been nicknamed the Cuban Carolyn Farb. He could get blood out of a turnip. He is so charismatic and so committed to this event. Single-handedly, almost, he has kept this event alive and churning out cash for our community. But I got to know Gilbert, and he just had such passion that I wanted to come on board and get involved.
Well, fabulous.
And wait till you see him in drag with that whole Latina Spitfire vibe going. He's pretty terrific.
Well, that's just just great that all this stuff is happening. And as you said, this will be the last year, and it will go out as a big bang. And certainly, how many years has this been happening?
It's been happening since 88. The dinner parties were like 88 to 92. Right. Then the show started happening in 92, and it took a while to find the right venue. We were 1 year at the Metro Majestic Theater downtown. Then the next year, we were at the Metropolitan Multi-Service Center on West Gray. And then we sort of found a home that really worked for us at the Hornberger Conference Center.
That's also where the reunions of Kindred Spirits happens, too.
Interesting.
Yeah. And a couple other, I guess, community events happen there, too.
There's some bingo events there, queer bingo there. Remember that?
That was MCCR Church did that, I think.
I think so,
yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. There was actually some other gambling, but it was all... fundraising type.
Right, and a silent auction, and I guess your organization is going to have a silent auction.
Oh, we'll have a silent auction. Maria Todd is going to be our live auctioneer. She's wonderful. She gets those bids going up. The crowd loves her. So it's going to be a stellar event. There'll also be food served, so it's a great night out. You get a show, you get live and silent auctions, you get food, and you get great memories.
Great. Well, thank you very much for coming on and letting us know about it. And certainly if something becomes of this in some form or the other after this big bang event, let us know, because we'd certainly like to be able to publicize it.
Give us the date, the place, and the website again real quickly.
Sure. It is Halloween Magic. That is going to be on Saturday, November 1st at the Edwin Hornberger Conference Center. And you can visit our website. It actually has lots of photos from past performances over the years. That's www.halloweenmagic.org. And the phone number to get more information for tickets is 713-226-2342.
Great. Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you all so much.
You're listening to Queer Voices, and we want to remind you that we are going through fundraising right now. And I think it's pretty quiet out there in the lobby. We haven't, as far as we know, we haven't had anybody who's joined or renewed. And we're really looking for new members, people who haven't joined before. So that we could sort of bring you into our dysfunctional family, in a sense. But it's a family that really has a lot that works together because we are so diverse. We have so many different types of radio shows and events and, you know, everything from cultural events, music, talk shows. And we don't always agree with each other, but what we do try to do is bring, you know, what's going on in Houston, what's going on in the, you know, sort of the things that you don't hear about other places that isn't necessarily covered by the mass media otherwise, the newspapers or the TV stations. It's some of the events that doesn't always make those headlines. So we're asking you to call us. Call us now at 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT.
I can hear a bit of Roy Orbison influence in that myself.
Uh-huh.
That was Larry Block with Losing Town.
And our previous guest just forked over some cash.
Well, very nice.
Yeah.
Maybe that's how we need to plan it. Just invite people and say, okay, to be on. No, we don't do it that way.
And you can't get out of the studio until.
Right. Right.
But you can always show up at the door and fork over the cash.
Yes, and we've
to.
Had that. We have people show mm-hmm. up with cash in the many years that we've been here.
Maybe once.
We actually used to have somebody every drive show up as anonymous and deliver some cash. But we really do need you if you're interested in this type of programming and what goes over the air and the fact that the GLBT community has a voice. And it's not just us who are here on the mic. We do invite people. In fact, most of the shows, we're talking to other people in the community who are involved in doing events.
One point I always like to make when I'm here pitching is, maybe if you're on the edge of, you know, pledging, pledge for somebody else. Pledge for that 15-year-old in Angleton or in Cyprus who's out in the boonies. Maybe they don't have any other contact with the GLBT world. This is their window.
Well, and you know, Ray Hill used to say that a lot, that, you know, certainly in the older days when we didn't have the internet, you couldn't find some of that stuff, although it may be blocked still at some of the schools. The
right.
fact that this was many times the only outlet because the newspapers...
Yeah, not every 15-year-old has a computer.
That's true, exactly. And we sort of bring the world to them and what's going on in the community. And
I sure wish it would have been brought to me when I was in age.
Absolutely, Maya, the same.
We have,
they did have radio then.
We have Matt sitting out there in the green room answering the phone. There's just one of him and there's four phones, and I would really like to see and
him
watch
jump.
On the monitor what happens
yes, yes.
when there's three phones ringing around him and he's only got one of him to answer them. That would be really funny to watch. What number to call? What
the
number?
Magic number, mm-hmm. and we should all have this memorized, is 713-526-KPFT, 713-526-5738. We have a few announcements before the top of the hour, and if you're not aware of it, early voting is going on. Early voting started today, Monday. It goes Monday through Friday here in Harris County between 8 a.m. and 4:30. On Saturday, it's between 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Sunday is 1 to 6 p.m. And then next Monday through Friday, through the 31st, it's 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. And from all indications, it is a record turnout.
Where can people find out where to vote?
You can go to a number of different places. The official place is to go to harrisvotes.org. There are 30...
Or montgomeryvotes.org.
Yes, you can also... the other counties, if you're not in Harris County. The caucus.org also has some of that information there. There are 36 early voting locations in Harris County, and you can go to any one of those to early vote if you live in Harris County or the respective county you live in. Galveston, of course, because of what happened on the island and Bolivar Peninsula, it's probably better to early vote because your regular voting place may not exist. And I believe there's 15 locations in Galveston County. And you can basically go to the web and look up your county, and there will be information there. I guess one of the problems they were having is that because so many people newly registered, just before the cutoff date of the 6th of October, they're not all in the computer yet in Harris County. So if you just registered, it may not be there in the computer yet.
Really?
Yes, unfortunately. So you can either provisionally vote, and then it will be counted when they match that up. Oh, the other thing is the way they verify some of these people when they newly registered is through the Social Security system, and they shut down their computers to do maintenance, and which was like brilliant, isn't it? But anyway,
well, they just take DNA tests.
So. Yeah, well, they're probably going to go to that pretty soon. Or you may want to wait a couple of days. But it's really good to early vote because then you get it out of the way, and there's no excuse.
I think it's going to be very crowded election day.
Yes.
Very.
They expect record turnouts, which is really, really good. The recommendations by the Houston GLBT Political Caucus, you can find them online at thecaucus.org. And, of course, KPFT does not endorse candidates because we're a nonprofit organization.
That's thecaucus.org?
Yes, thecaucus.org. A couple other things that are going on in the community, and I don't even remember what's going on in the community. Because Outsmart, it has their new issue out of the Gay and the Greatest.
Is that out yet?
Yes. Yes. And actually, they've been doing a better job of getting them out.
That's November, right?
No, October.
Okay.
October. Right. The hurricane, of course, put them behind schedule a little bit, which is understandable. I guess they didn't have power for, like about a week, I guess. But they've been getting better at getting it out near the first of the month. And you can pick them up all over.
Who are we?
We are KPFT Houston, and I'm not sure our little translator in Galveston is working anymore, but I don't know that at 89.5.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't heard. I doubt it.
I doubt it, too.
Oh, and we'd like to thank Jim, who called in and pledged.
Terrific.
Great. Yeah. Great.
So, the phone number for calling in and pledging at is 713-526-5738, and we'd like to encourage about 950 million more people to do that.
At least, right.
Yeah, really.
Right. And you can do it online at kpft.org. Do we have our next guest? Well, no, you got something to play for us first, don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I've got that little bridgey thingy.
Yes.
And then we do have our guest.
Okay.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Belinsky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
Hey! Sing if you're glad to be gay. Sing if you're happy. This way.
Bridgy thingy. Well, you got to love it. We're nothing if not informal, right?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. That's what I used to love about the Tomorrow Show. They used to always talk about the behind-the-scenes thing when Tom Snyder used to do
that
show.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Of course, I'm aging myself
here. And
he
talked to the cameraman.
Right, exactly. but we all work together here. On the line with us, we do have Megan Stabler. Is that correct?
That's correct. How are you?
I'm doing fine, and how are you doing this evening?
Good. I've been listening to you guys all evening, so it's been fun.
Okay. Well, this is a really incredible, and of course I'm a political junkie in my sort of what I do for, at least at presently what I do, is I work for the Houston GLBT Political Caucus, and at this part of the cycle of the election, I'm out there in front of one of the early voting locations and handing out our endorsement cards, but being a political junkie, this is really a historical election, isn't it?
Absolutely, and I guess, like you guys know, it was only 2 months ago that I actually took my oath of citizenship.
I didn't know that.
Absolutely. I think this is, and I've lived here for 19 years, this is probably the most important time in maybe over 100 years, or at least since women got the vote and the civil rights were given to others in the 60s, that I can think of for America to really stand up and be really what it was founded on as far as equality. So I took that oath at the end of July.
Well, and it's probably an incredible experience to be able to vote now, where a lot of us are spoiled and we've had this right for, you know, since we've been 18 or when it used to be 21.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe some of us got a little bit sort of like complacent over it. And we've seen what happened because we've got complacent over it. I mean, this country seems to be ready to fall apart right now economically, worldwide. And there seems to be a real force for people wanting change.
Right, but I think equally so, and obviously we'll talk about the subject in a second, we can't still be complacent. Obviously, early voting has opened up today, and I was actually at dinner with foodies tonight here in Austin this evening at another fundraising event, and it was amazing to see how many people voted, and equally how many people were saying they were going to vote, but they didn't know when. And that's the one thing we can't be complacent on, is that somebody else will vote, therefore we don't have to cast ours. Every one of us needs to stand up, and that's exactly, you know, why I'm doing what I do.
Well, and let's identify that you work for the Human Rights Campaign.
I'm a member of the Human Rights Campaign. I sit on both the wonderful Houston Steering Committee, and I've been associated with them for a long time, a great team of people. I'm also on Austin's Steering Committee, but I think most importantly, I'm on HRC's National Business Council, as well as being on Senator Obama's National LGBT Policy and Steering Committee. So.
Okay. And as a person who works for the Houston GLBT Political Caucus, we had the opportunity to screen both Senator Obama via the phone and Senator Hillary Clinton for the mm-hmm. primary election. And mm-hmm. that was pretty historic for us, too, because we usually focus on the down-ballot races.
Right.
And they were both incredibly excellent on our issues, and probably, and I'm speaking, you know, I'm speaking for myself, that they're both excellent on what needs to be done in this country in fixing it and being able to get us back on track of being the type of country that we're supposed to be and what's written in the Constitution of being that real special country. And I saw the movie W on Friday, which is just an incredible movie, sad movie in a sense, and which sort of gives the collapse history of what the present president has done to our country, mm-hmm. along with other people allowing him to do it.
Mm-hmm. I need to see it. Haven't seen it yet, but absolutely want to see it. But don't you think it's amazing that just in a short time, and I really mean that. I mean, if you move on from the Stonewall riots to today, that we're actually having presidential candidates that are willing to sit down and listen and understand, comprehend, and also make policy when it comes to LGBT issues. And I think that's a tremendous showing as to how the fabric of America has really morphed what the elected officials must look at when it comes to policies and now practices, too. So I think this is an amazing time, as you said before.
And absolutely. I mean, the film Milk is going to be coming out either later this month or early November, which chronicles Harvey Milk. And look at exactly how much progress we made. And probably one of the things that he didn't see in his time was the fact that a lot of the major corporations that moved ahead of policy in this country of doing non-discrimination mm-hmm. and or also doing domestic partner benefits, including a lot of the corporations here in Houston that were sort of the oil good old boy type of corporations, except for ExxonMobil, mm-hmm. that it's pretty incredible that has happened.
Well, it is, but I think it has to be a check and a balance. I don't think that one can solely rely on the federal government to go ahead and enact policies. I think policies have to be driven, especially for the workforce, from the workplace. And you're right. In Houston, we are very lucky. Just off the top of my head, Shell, Continental Airlines, and BMC Software, and I may be missing one or two, this year did receive 100% scoring on HRC's CEI, the Corporate Equality Index. But I think as my friend Jennifer Poole would comment, and I will definitely comment, even the CEI has some flaws when it comes to transgender issues and things. So, you know, not to sort of preempt further announcements, but as part of the HRC's Business Council, I am on the CEI Working Committee, and we will be making significant enhancements to that to move that sort of marker that corporations try and achieve further ahead, as well as hopefully in step with federal policies, where we will hopefully get another inclusive end. I don't think we're going to see that in the first 100 days of the Obama administration. I don't think we're going to see it probably in the first year of the Obama administration. I'd like to think we would, but there still is some work that we need to do, both in Congress as well as in the Senate, to make sure that we have a number of votes. And now, if you think about it, when you talk about votes, that's exactly why we need to think about getting everything out there to vote the right way, and hopefully get more of the votes that we need on the House side and more of the votes that we need in the Senate side, so that we don't have filibusters or something happening. So.
Absolutely. And the surveys show that the younger people do not have a problem with being inclusive and having non-discrimination against all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's definitely what the future is. But the most important thing is that you still have to go out and vote, and that's always been a problem of getting the younger people out to vote. And this whole Obama phenomenon, which hopefully is going to move forward, is that younger people seem to be more involved. And it's not just getting the president elected. It's getting all those down ballot races, including the judges and the county commissioners and the state representatives. And one of the things that's coming up, and this is really interesting, that when we were interviewing Hillary Clinton, and unfortunately we didn't get a chance to ask Senator Obama, was about the 2010 census, is the fact that that census is what is sort of the platform of how redistricting happens, and that sort of helps get more progressive people or more fairer districts, both statewide and for congressional districts.
Absolutely. And, you know, to comment about the younger generation, I still see that we will have a time when the workforce will be led by these younger people, to your point. Fully inclusive, I don't care what you do, you know, outside of work, you have the right to place a photograph of your partner, domestic, civil, or married partner on your desk. You're not going to be discriminated against. And I think the cool thing that really will shake America, and it's probably not going to happen this election cycle, but it will probably happen the next one, is that the people, the individuals that are coming out of the colleges and universities today are going to be looking for that equality in the corporations that they go to. So over time, it's going to change. And just as we face issues around don't ask, don't tell with the military, it's not normally the vast majority of military that has an issue with gays or lesbians serving in the military. It seems to be the older, more mainstream, you know, generals and colonels, albeit we've had several come out and say this is the policies run and it needs to be changed. So this is why I think this is just a general mix of everything is going to come together. The timing may not be perfect for what we need today, but the writing is on the wall. And, you know, as I like to say in some of my speeches, we're not here to try and take away marriage rights for opposite sex couples.
Sure.
We're not trying to discriminate based off of my opinion's mine and I need to force you to understand my opinion. We're just fighting for the same thing. And, you know, if I can just share with you, you know, just why I'm so passionate about doing what I do, not just for HRC, but AIDS Foundation Houston, where I'm on the board, as well as doing the stuff for Senator Obama, it's that I used to be that white male with rights and with privileges and with the ability to marry whomever I wanted, go wherever I wanted, work wherever I wanted. And then when you transition, you lose it. And you lose a lot of different rights. And, you know, I am a lesbian in a wonderful relationship with a beautiful woman. It is hard for me to marry, you know, and go to a couple of states and do that if I wanted to. We're certainly thinking about that. We're thinking about children in the workplace, as many of your listeners probably are already aware of. I can just get fired in 38 states just for being that label of transgender. Forget the woman issues that I'm now classed as a woman. I can be fired. So when you lose those rights, when you lose those, I'm not even going to call them privileges, I'm going to call them entitlements as that white male, and then you lose everything, that's why voting today is so important, that I'm going to be able to put the check mark or dial, whatever I need to do in this voting booth, which is going to be a new experience for me anyway, to make sure that I'm at least one person that is trying to get back what I once had and fight for the equality of everybody in my community. And that's why I'm very passionate, I'm very active, and that's also why we're going to be having this event here in Houston this coming Saturday.
Right, right. And just, you know, it's really interesting. I watched the show called Mad Men that's on AMC, and it's about working for a advertising agency in the 60s. And just as we were talking earlier, it's so incredible to look at how it was for even women in the workforce, mm-hmm. or Jewish people, or anybody who didn't quite fit into that white male role. And we have moved a lot further, but we haven't gotten there. And the reality is that even being gay in Texas, you can get fired at will.
Right. And it's a, you know, you throw on top of it, you know, the hate crimes and everything else. It's a sad state of affairs when everybody thinks, you know, everybody else thinks the world is okay and you don't need to have those protections. You don't need to have those rights. It's shocking.
So let's talk about this event that's going on Saturday.
Sure. Well, a number of us, and I think you mentioned the GLBT Caucus, as well as the Transgender Education Network of Texas, HRC, Equality Texas. And earlier on you mentioned MCCR, the Resurrection Metropolitan Community Church. We're hosting an event at the church at Resurrection MCC on the 25th, this coming Saturday from 9:30 to 11, which is titled Election 2008 and You, Get Informed. And really what we want to open up with is more of a panel discussion with people like myself. We have State Representative Garnet Coleman. We've got Houston City Controller Anise Parker. We've got Jennifer Poole, as you all know, who's president of the political caucus in Houston itself. Lisa Sheps, who's representing Equality Texas, as well as Tent, and a number of other individuals. They're really just to discuss the issues and talking about why change, the tagline for the campaign, but why change comes and why we need it today and what the impact will be both at a national level as well as a local level. When we have the next Texas legislative session, for example, what that change could mean and what can we expect from things that will happen within inside of our or to our community itself.
Well, this sounds wonderful, and it would be great to go to this event, and then right after this event, go and early vote.
Well, that's a great idea.
And in fact, I would even give a suggestion that, a lot of us, I'm working at the Multipurpose Center at 1475 West Gray, which is one of the biggest places, but it's going to be a madhouse on Saturday. But from MCCR Church, you can venture downtown to 1001 Preston at Main, and since it's a Saturday, you still will have to pay for parking on the street, but it should be a much easier in and out to go early vote.
I think that's a wonderful idea. I mean, there's nothing better to do on a Saturday morning, right, after this finishes. But it's going to run for 2.5 hours, and we'll hopefully get to a lot of different issues such as marriage equality and relationship issues and hate crime legislation, healthcare, and obviously the ever-talked-about Inclusive and the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, as well as many other things, so we can talk about where both of the candidates on one side, and the other side being Obama, will sort of fall, depending on what happens. So what's the impact to us as Texans, and particularly to the impact of Houstonians?
Well, great, Megan. Thank you for joining us. And that's at MCCR Church this Saturday. And do you have the address in front of you?
Off the top of my head, it's 2025 West 11th Street as T.C. Jester.
Yeah, I knew it was at T.C. Jester. Yeah, so that's just up in the Heights area, inside the Loop. And there's a great parking lot there, so it'd be real easy to get in and out. And I'm sure there's bus service there, too.
Yeah, you can Google the information, or if somebody would like to come and just like to get more data, just email getinformed08@resurrectionmcc.org. getinformed08@resurrectionmcc.org.
Well, great. Megan, thank you very much for joining us this evening.
Thank you, guys. You have a wonderful evening.
Okay. And, of course, you're listening to KPFT, and we are in Fun Drive. Fun Drive is supposed to be fun, and sometimes we're not always that fun doing Fun Drive, but fun and fund is very important because funding keeps this station going. And we're very privileged to be able to do this radio show, be able to interview people in the community and talk about what's going on and talk about the event. And we're always open if you want to, suggest some other topics that you can email us, jack@queervoices.org, because we're really interested in doing that. But we do have to sort of do this a couple times a year because, we get very little bit government funding. Most of our funding comes from our members. We are a member station. You're part of keeping this station going. So we're asking you to call us at 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT.
And, you talk about the difference or the similarity between fun and funding. It's always fun to listen to our program, and we have fun doing it. So I think it would be fun for everyone who is listening to participate. Of course, you participate by listening, but participate even more by calling in at 713-526-5738 and participate with some nominal dollar amount that would help to keep the program on the air. Okay, well, for the next segment of Queer Voices,
Yes, we want
David Sedaris.
David Sedaris.
Mm-hmm. He's going to be at Jones Hall tomorrow night. And if you don't already have tickets, I don't know if tickets would still be available, but if you you can always check on that at 713-227-4SPA. That's just the regular Jones Hall number, and you can look that up on the Google, or you can look it up in the phone book or whatever. But David Sedaris is a gay comic, 51-year-old gay comic. His gift isn't really that he's able to take something small like a boil or a lozenge and make it big. Instead, he's a writer and a humorist who is skilled at turning actions involving those kinds of small things into contemplative and slightly quitoxic narratives. Some are triumphant, like a trip to Japan to quit smoking. Many are embarrassing. When the subject is his psyche or his family, few areas are off limits. Evidence is available in all of his books, including the most recent one, When You Are Engulfed in Flames. In talking about his interaction with readers on book and lecture tours, Sedaris rattles off C.W. Lewis's quote, "We read to know that we are not alone." While the small actions that he portrays as epic in his stories seem too bizarre or comical to happen among his legions of fans and the rest of us, a gem of truthy byproduct always resonates, and perhaps that's because, well, is it because his embarrassments are really bigger, or is it more likely because he's just better at describing them? Well, here's a sample of David Sedaris.
The girl next door. "Well, that little experiment is over," my mother said. "You tried it, it didn't work out, so what do you say we just move on?" She was dressed in her roll-up-the-shirt-sleeves outfit, the faded turquoise skirt, a cotton headscarf, and one of the sporty blouses my father had bought in the hope she might take up golf. "We'll start with the kitchen," she said. "That's always the best way, isn't it?" I was moving again, this time because of the neighbors. "Oh, no," my mother said. "They're not to blame. Let's be honest now." She liked to take my problems back to the source, which was usually me. Like, for instance, when I got food poisoning, it wasn't the chef's fault. "You're the one who wanted to go Oriental. You're the one who ordered the lo mein." Lo mein, it's two words. "Oh, he speaks Chinese now. Tell me, Charlie Chan, what's the word for 6 straight hours of vomiting and diarrhea?" What she meant was that I'd try to save money. The cheap Chinese restaurant, the $75 a month apartment. Cut corners and it'll always come back to bite you in the ass. That was one of her sayings. But if you didn't have money, how could you not cut corners? And whose fault is it that you don't have any money? I'm not the one who turned up his nose at a full-time job. I'm not the one who spends his entire paycheck down at the hobby shop. I understand that. "Well, good," she said. And then we began to wrap the breakables. In my version of the story, the problem began with the child next door, a third grader who, according to my mother, was bad news right from the start. "Put it together," she'd said when I first called to tell her about it. "Take a step back. Think." But what was there to think about? She was a 9-year-old girl. "Oh, they're the worst," my mother said. "What's her name? Brandy? Well, that's cheap, isn't it?" "I'm sorry," I said, "but aren't I talking to someone who named her daughter Tiffany?" "My hands were tied," she shouted. "The damn Greeks had me up against the wall, and you know it." "Whatever you say." "So this girl," my mother continued, and I knew what she was going to ask before she even said it. "What does her father do?" I told her there wasn't a father, at least not one that I knew about, and then I waited as she lit a fresh cigarette. "Let's see," she said. 9-year-old girl named after an alcoholic beverage, single mother in a neighborhood the police won't even go to. What else have you got for me?" She spoke as if I'd formed these people out of clay, as if it were my fault that the girl was 9 years old and her mother couldn't keep a husband. "I don't suppose this woman has a job, does she?" "She's a bartender." Oh, that's splendid, my mother said. Go on. The woman worked nights and left her daughter alone from 4 in the afternoon until 2 or 3 in the morning. Both were blonde, their hair almost white, with invisible eyebrows and lashes. The mother darkened hers with pencil, but the girl appeared to have none at all. Her face was like the weather in one of those places with no discernible seasons. Every now and then the circles beneath her eyes would shade to purple. She might show up with a fat lip or a scratch on her neck, but her features betrayed nothing. You had to feel sorry for a girl like that. No father, no eyebrows, and that mother. Our apartments shared a common wall, and every night I'd hear the woman stomping home from work. Most often she was with someone, but whether alone or with company, she'd find some excuse to bully her daughter out of bed. Brandy had left a donut on the TV, or Brandy had forgotten to drain her bathwater. They're important lessons to learn, but there's something to be said for leading by example. I never went into their apartment, but what I saw from the door was pretty rough. Not simply messy or chaotic, but hopeless, the lair of a depressed person. Given her home life, it wasn't surprising that Brandy latched onto me. A normal mother might have wondered what was up, her 9-year-old daughter spending time with a 26-year-old man. But this one didn't seem to care. I was just free stuff to her. A free babysitter, a free cigarette machine, the whole store. I'd hear her through the wall sometimes. Hey, go ask your friend for a roll of toilet paper. Go ask your friend to make you a sandwich. If company was coming and she wanted to be alone, she'd kick the girl out. Why don't you go next door and see what your little playmate is up to? Before I moved in, Brandy's mother had used a couple downstairs, but you could tell that the relationship had soured. Next to the grocery carts chained to their porch was a store-bought sign, the no trespassing followed by a handwritten, "This means you, Brandy." There was a porch on the second floor as well, with one door leading to Brandy's bedroom and another door leading to mine. Technically, the two apartments were supposed to share it, but the entire thing was taken up with their junk, and so I rarely used it. I can't wait until you get out of your little slumming phase, my mother said on first seeing the building. She spoke as if she'd been raised in splendor, but in fact her childhood home had been much worse. The suits she wore, the delicate bridges holding her teeth in place, was all an invention. You live in bad neighborhoods so you can feel superior, she'd say, the introduction always to a fight. The point is to move up in the world. Even sideways will do in a pinch, but what's the point in moving down? As a relative newcomer to the middle class, she worried that her children might slip back into the world of public assistance and bad teeth. The finer things were not yet in our blood, or at least that was the way she saw it. My thrift shop clothing drove her up the wall, as did the second-hand mattress lying without benefit of box springs upon my hardwood floor. It's not ironic, she'd say. It's not ethnic. It's filthy. The end of the affair. On a summer evening in Paris, Hugh and I went to see The End of the Affair, a Neil Jordan adaptation of the Graham Greene novel. I had trouble keeping my eyes open because I was tired and not completely engaged. Hugh had trouble keeping his eyes open because they were essentially swollen shut. He sobbed from beginning to end, and by the time we left the theater, he was completely dehydrated. I asked if he always cried during comedies, and he accused me of being grossly insensitive, a charge I am trying to plea bargain down to a simple obnoxious. Looking back, I should have known better than to accompany Hugh to a love story. Such movies are always a danger, as unlike battling aliens or going undercover to track a serial killer, falling in love is something most adults have actually experienced at some point in their lives. The theme is universal and encourages the viewer to make a number of unhealthy comparisons, ultimately raising the question, why can't our lives be like that? It's a box best left unopened, and its avoidance explains the continued popularity of vampire epics and martial arts extravaganzas. The end of the affair made me look like an absolute toad. The movie's voracious couple was played by Ralph Fiennes and Julianne Moore, who did everything but eat one another. Their love was doomed and clandestine, and even when the bombs were falling, they looked radiant. The picture was fairly highbrow, so I was surprised when the director employed a device most often seen in TV movies of the week. Everything's going along just fine, and then one of the characters either coughs or sneezes, meaning that within 20 minutes, he or she will be dead. It might have been different had Julianne Moore suddenly started bleeding from the eyes, but coughing, in and of itself, is fairly pedestrian. When she did it, Hugh cried. When I did it, he punched me in the shoulder and told me to move. "I can't wait until she dies," I whispered. I don't know if it was their good looks or their passion, but something about Julianne Moore and Ralph Fiennes put me on the defensive. I'm not as unfeeling as Hugh accuses me of being, but things change once you've been together for more than 10 years. They rarely make movies about long-term couples, and for good reason. Our lives are boring. The courtship had its moments, but now we've become the predictable part two no one in his right mind would ever pay to see. "Look, they're opening their electric bill." Hugh and I have been together for so long that in order to arouse extraordinary passion, we need to engage in actual physical combat. Once he hit me on the back of the head with a broken wine glass, and I fell to the floor pretending to be unconscious. That was romantic, or would have been had he rushed to my side rather than stepping over my body to fetch the dustpan. Call me unimaginative, but I still can't think of anyone else I'd rather be with. On our worst days, I figure things will work themselves out. Otherwise, I really don't give our problems much thought. Neither of us would ever publicly display affection. We're just not the type. We can't profess love without talking through hand puppets, and we'd never consciously sit down to discuss our relationship. These, to me, are good things. They were fine with Hugh as well until he saw that damned movie and was reminded that he has other options. The picture ended at around 10, and afterwards we went for coffees at a little place across the street from the Luxembourg Gardens. I was ready to wipe the movie out of my mind, but Hugh was still under its spell. He looked as though his life had not only passed him by, but paused along the way to spit in his face. Our coffees arrived, and as he blew his nose into a napkin, I encouraged him to look on the bright side. "Listen," I said, "we maybe don't live in wartime London, but in terms of the occasional bomb scare, Paris is a pretty close second. We both love bacon and country music. What more could you possibly want?" What more could he want? It was an incredibly stupid question, and when he failed to answer, I was reminded of just how lucky I truly am. Movie characters might chase each other through the fog or race down the stairs of burning buildings, but that's just for beginners. Real love amounts to withholding the truth, even when you're offered the perfect opportunity to hurt someone's feelings. I wanted to say something to this effect, but my hand puppets were back home in their drawer. Instead, I pulled my chair a few inches closer, and we sat silently at our little table on the square, looking for all the world like two people in love.
So that was 51-year-old gay comic David Sedaris, and he, tomorrow night, is going to be at Jones Hall. And so if you would like to see and hear more of David Sedaris, go to Jones Hall tomorrow.
And the Santaland Diaries, which is probably the most famous thing, earliest thing that David did on NPR about
Santaland?
Yes, he was an elf at Macy's.
Oh, okay.
And it's just a great, great story. Well, they're going to do that at the Alley in the next month or two, and we'll try to do a segment on that because it's just absolutely hilarious. we are getting close to the end of the show. We've got about 20 minutes left, and we haven't come close to our goal. So we're really asking you if you could help pitch in. And especially if you're a new, if you're not a person who pledged in the past. Of course, if you did, we'll still be happy to take your money. Pledge to keep KPFT alive and well. And, you know, we're all volunteers here on Queer Voices, and most of the people who do the shows here on KPFT are volunteers, so we do not get paid. But it takes money to keep the small staff that we do have here, and the equipment, and all the other bills that we have to pay, the electricity bill, which is rather hefty to have a 100,000-watt transmitter, and the fees that we have to pay to, like, the maintenance of this building. And believe me, they don't. This is not the Taj Mahal. This is very basic stuff. And the computers that sometimes we have to wind up on a crank. But, you know, those computers actually sometimes work better than my laptop that has Vista on it. But that's a whole nother subject. They're actually a lot more reliable. So we actually have the tools to do the show pretty well. I mean, being able to get this way out over the internet and being able to play it. JD being able to send the music that he picks and over the internet so that we can play it here on the air. And that's really, really sort of neat that we have the tools, and being able to place people on the phone on the air and sound pretty decently as best as it could. Having the network to be able to do Democracy Now, all that stuff is really, really neat. But it's very, very basic because we do not spend a lot of money on that type of stuff. But it takes that basic money to keep us on the air. So we're asking you to please call us. Call us at 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT.
And while you are doing that, here is the rest of the program from This Way Out.
We'll pay a tuneful tribute to a tragic victim who still helps the world understand what matters later in the program. Openly gay New Zealand Member of Parliament Tim Barnett retires at the end of the current session after a 12-year career marked by key fights for justice and equality. As he prepared to make his farewell speech, Barnett and This Way Out Auckland correspondent Ross Stevenson reflected on how much has changed in New Zealand since the 1976 outing of politician and academic Marilyn Waring.
Tim, this week Parliament dedicated a rainbow room. A lot of people are intrigued by this, I'm sure. Tell us about how this came about, because you had a bit to do with it. It's a committee room, I believe, which has got special kind of decorations in it.
Well, over the years, and I guess starting in the 1930s with what's now called the Native Affairs Room, Parliament had space allocated to people either who were represented in Parliament among the MPs, so therefore with the suffrage room, which was put in 1993 to commemorate women and their vote and their contribution to Parliament. Or more latterly, it's sort of become a wider statement about diversity. So we have an Asian room, and we have a Pacifica room, and we have the women's room. But the obvious gap in terms of diversity was something to recognise both the Rainbow MPs, but more the fact that Parliament's been pretty important in our journey to full citizenship. And in fact, in recent times, the battles have been bigger for our group than the others in terms of getting legislation through. So that was when the Asian Room was commemorated. I thought to myself, well, here's a chance to maybe complete the series. And MPs from a number of parties approached the Speaker, and she agreed to that.
This is the Speaker's call, is it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the allocation of space in Parliament is entirely up to the Speaker.
I see.
Yeah. But she was approached by our two current Asian MPs about the Asia Room, and by the Pacific Caucus of MPs about the Pacific Room. I mean, interestingly enough, if we end up with photographs of MPs in our room who have identified as rainbow through the history of Parliament, then the number is already bigger than either the Asia Room or the Pacific Room. And whereas some of the other rooms have got artwork in, this one is more about the campaigns that have been around Parliament. So at the moment there's a David Hindley series of photographs around homosexual law reform, and there are picture boards going in which has traced trace the history of law reform in relation to Parliament, including the early failed attempts to get law reform, the petitions, and some of the brave MPs from all sides who put their heads over the parapets, and some artworks, kind of relevant artworks from lesbian and gay artists. So, and also on for the opening of Monday, we had a panel from the AIDS Memorial Quilt. So it's the room carries on its normal function, but it's just got a bit of a special connotation.
Tim, there've been some interesting journeys within Parliament for some of our queer colleagues, and you know the name that immediately comes to mind is Professor Marilyn Waring.
Mm.
And I believe Marilyn was there for the unveiling of the opening. That must have been quite a moving experience for people to have her there for that.
Oh yes, yes. And Marilyn's always this extraordinary mix of somebody who's highly intelligent, intellectual, and a serious academic, and somebody who is can communicate with extraordinary emotion. And obviously for her there was a lot of emotion in being in a space in that building where she sort of suffered so much, I guess because of her sexuality. Mm. And she spoke, quite a lot about the impact it had on her, her relationship with her family, her feelings, sort of looking back on it now, the sort of questioning whether being the first, in inverted commas, out gay queer MP really means a great deal, because being out means different things to different generations, sure, different people. But positive in the sense that we've gone from being entirely out in the cold to being no longer labelled as criminals, to having laws to protect us, to having our relationships recognised, and now we have a bit of a space in the building.
Well, Tim, your valedictory speech is coming up this afternoon, and it's traditionally the sort of time where you rake over the coals of your experience in Parliament and try and make your colleagues laugh, I suppose. Without giving too much away, what are you going to highlight? What for you is the highlight of having been in Parliament? How many years is it now?
12 years. I often end up being so closely aligned with prostitution law reform and civil union. I mean, they're obviously mentioned, but they're not the core of it, really.
Right.
I mean, what I've tried to talk about, because I've got an electorate to address comments to, as well as a sort of wider network.
Sure.
It's really, I think, about this, what this profession of representation of democracy is all about,
mm-hmm,
and how we do it. And a bit about the emotion of leaving, I guess.
Well, I'm sure that anybody looking back on your career, hauling it over as a piece of history, will recognise that you've made a really worthwhile contribution while you've been there. Thank you from our communities, I'm sure, for all you've done.
Not just a working parliamentarian with particular skills, but a man of great courage, I would have to say, too, to be prepared to front the bills that you've fronted, but with such dignity. And I hope your exit from Parliament has acknowledges the manner that you have, I'm sure, with your colleagues, but certainly in the communities who love you.
Oh, that's very, very kind of you to say that.
Okay, well, look, Tim, all the best for the future. And thank you, Tim, for being with us.
Absolutely. Wonderful.
That was This Way Out correspondent Ross Stevenson in conversation with outgoing New Zealand MP Tim Barnett.
We've got good news, bad news, and good news about your favorite international LGBT radio program. The good news is that you can now hear free podcasts of This Way Out. To subscribe, log on to www.thiswayout.org. The bad news is that we're still owed thousands of dollars from our former online outlet, and that puts This Way Out in serious financial jeopardy. Stations get the program from us for free. You can get the podcast for free. Producing and distributing the program, however, is not free. But the other good news is that This Way Out's unique on-the-scene reports covering the fight for same-gender marriage equality from the world's first legal weddings in the Netherlands are now available in a 2-CD collection called Altard States. This Way Out listener supporters can get this and other special programs by visiting our website. Please say, I do, at www.thiswayout.org.
Hello, this is Judy Shepherd, the Executive Director of the Matthew Shepherd Foundation and the mother of Matthew Shepherd. And you are listening to This Way Out, the international radio magazine for all our sexually diverse communities.
Scooter Valley Hospital with a final update on Matthew Shepard, Monday, October 12th. Matthew died shortly before 1 a.m. today as a result of injuries he sustained last week.
It was not the first time a gay, lesbian, bi, or trans person had fallen victim to brutally fatal homophobia, and it certainly was not the last. As the 10th anniversary of the death of Matthew Shepard is being observed, the foundation that bears his name continues to work for an end to anti-LGBT hate violence. This Way Out's Sherry Lund spoke with singer-songwriter Randy Driscoll recently about her contributions to the cause.
Randy, your song, What Matters, tell us a little bit about the inspiration for writing that.
I was living in San Diego, California, when I heard the horrific story of Matthew Shepard's death. And like everyone, I was just very moved and very saddened. And I had the opportunity to see Judy and Dennis Shepard, Matthew's parents, on the news. And I was really very moved and very inspired by their love, their unconditional love. So I wrote a song honoring really Matthew's life and his family and the unconditional love that I believe that family represents.
Since that time, What Matters has become the official benefit single for the Matthew Shepard Foundation. Is that right?
It was my intention that the only way I would release the song, which was very personal to me, the only way I would release it publicly would was to make sure it was a benefit single, and our hope was to do something related to an anti-hate crime charity. And at that time, 10 years ago, the Shepherds actually began the Matthew Shepard Foundation. So it was at that time that they adopted the song on behalf of the foundation, and it became the official benefit single. And that was what we're coming up on almost 10 years now.
Speaking of coming up on 10 years, there's a special concert series that's happening now. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely, I'm happy to. I'm traveling the country doing a series of concerts. Our goal is to do 10 concerts, raising $10,000 in honor of the 10-year remembrance of Matthew Shepard's death. We're certainly hoping to raise more than $10,000 for the work of the Matthew Shepard Foundation and the educational programs that they are doing right now. They're doing just wonderful work, and you can find out more about that work at MatthewShepard.org.
How much money has that single raised?
The single itself has raised almost $50,000 for the Matthew Shepard Foundation, and that's separate from some of the appearances that I've done, and also separate from the sheet music, the choral version, which is available at Yelton Roads Music. That is also 100% of the sheet music is also donated to the wonderful work of the Matthew Shepard Foundation. So I'm very proud to say those figures.
What Matters has also been featured in a couple of documentaries and a movie.
The NBC film starring Starka Channing, also several documentaries, lots of small projects. We did a music video for it. There's a documentary about the song, and it was even featured in a commercial directed by Spike Lee about, I guess it was about 7 years ago. So it's just very exciting for us that that people are using the song in many, many different ways.
So for more information about Randy Driscoll, you can log on to www.randydriscoll.com, R-A-N-D-I. D-R-I-S-C-O-L-L. Randy, where can people find the song?
They can find it right now on my webpage. You can also go directly to MatthewShepard.org, and the single is there, and we did it specifically there in its entirety, including a very special message from Judy Shepard. People can go there, and 100% of the proceeds will go directly to the charity, so it's a nice place to get it.
Thank you for joining us, Randy.
Thank you so much for having me.
For This Way Out, I'm Sherry Lund. And now here's Randy Driscoll with What Matters.
You're the brightest angel heaven had ever seen. You walked in with a story to tell, and 10,000 tongues to scream. And you sing, doesn't your heart? Who cares who I dream of? Who cares who I
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine. This week, Pam Marshall, Chris Wilson, Rex Walker with Bill Kelly, Ross Stevenson, and Sherry Lund contributed program material. Randy Driscoll sang What Matters, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is made possible by donations from our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can support our work, hear our podcasts, or subscribe to postal mail CDs or cassettes of our programs. To receive our weekly program email alerts, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappella and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening on WCRS Columbus, Ohio, CFXU Antigonish, Nova Scotia, KBRP Bisbee, Arizona, and more than 175 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. And we're all going to stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
As the hope of this nation looks forward to change, change happened a lot because of people who wanted that change to happen. And that change really had the birth of places like KPFT and community radio, community internet, all the stuff that people who really in the grassroots try to make things happen. And one of the few reasons why we happen to have this wonderful thing called KPFT and Pacifica Radio here in Houston is because people supported it. But it's a never-ending battle. We have to continue to support it. We're asking you to help if you can. I know times are tough. Believe me, I have my own tough times going on. But it's really important. Any amount that you could possibly spare and help and support to keep the station alive and keep the dream of live of having free speech radio, of having radio that discusses things that you don't hear anywhere else. Please call us. Call us at 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. You know, it's a really interesting concept that we're not told by the station of who we need to invite on as guest or how to do our show. Maybe sometimes it might be a good idea to give us some advice about it. But the reality is that we as a collective here at Queer Voices all work together in finding the guest and talking about the issues and putting together the parts of this show, like JD does the music, and Joan does, who's now in Iowa, does a lot of the book topics. And, you know, I know we talk a lot about politics, but we also talk about the cultural things that happen and the social things that happen in this community. So, and each programmer does their own little part in bringing that in, and we sort of all work together independently to try to bring together a full schedule of programs. So we ask you to do your part. As most of us are volunteers, we all know the value of this, and we hope you see the value of this or you hear the value of this. Keep this hope alive and keep this idea of free speech radio alive. Call us at 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. And next week we have Cumulant Music Heritage. And hopefully Joan's going to call us and talk about Halloween because she's such an expert on it.
And who did we have on this evening?
Well, today we had Andrew Edmondson, who talked about Halloween magic. We had a representative from the Women's Music Festival that's happening this Saturday. And we also had Megan Stabler, a member of the Houston Human Rights Campaign, and that's going to be an event this Saturday at RMCC starting at 9 a.m. to talk about the election, a panel discussion.
You've been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Walensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Walensky. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
Hi, this is Danny Everett. On Sunday, October 26th, the Houston Association of Acoustic Musicians will be hosting their second annual compilation CD release party. The event will take place at J.P. Hopps House, located 2317 South Highway 6, Houston. If you get lost, call 281-496-0623. Starting at 3 p.m., there will be live music featuring some of the selected musicians from the Ham compilation CD. This year's featured artists are The Hanshaws, T.C. Smythe, Danny Everett, Larry Carr, Bill Ward, Tracy Seegers, Brian Kellenack, Derek Aramburu, Carolyn Wallace, Steve Price, Swafo, Glennis Eastham, Brock Rodarte, Steve Reno, Randy Frisch, Cat Rose, Dave Pierce, Stan Hatch, Sailor White, and Ken Gaines. There will be a potluck dinner, so bring a dish. If you can't bring a dish, just make a donation at the door. See you there.
This is KPFT Houston.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.